Are you thinking about adding a four-legged family member and you're just not sure what kind or where to start? That's exactly what we're talking about today on the podcast. Welcome back to McCann Dogs. I think one of the biggest predictors for a dog and a human getting along and having a great relationship and a wonderful time throughout a dog's entire lifetime is picking the right type of dog for you.
Definitely.
I mean, is there anything else that you can think of that would be more important than picking the right dog to fit into your lifestyle?
Right. There's so many different breeds with so many different temperaments.
Yeah.
So many people pick a breed based on their looks.
Yes.
Or the one they had as a kid. But that might not fit into your family.
Yeah, and that's really important to note as well. A lot of the times we have these very skewed views of what happened during childhood. You know, we just had this. I didn't actually get to have dogs in my childhood, which is sad. We had an old cat. We had hamsters and rats. I had several rats growing up. They're fabulous pets. I know we've talked about rats on the podcast before.
Yes, yes, because I've had rats well. Too, and they're great. They're great little dogs, actually. If you aren't in the position to get a puppy or a dog right now, get a rat. And they just learn. Yeah. Like they learn like a little dog. Yes.
Well, and I found that like they're so much hardier than a lot of the little critters that we get for our kids when they're young. You know, hamsters and gerbils, they're gone so quickly. And that was one of the things from my childhood that I remember quite well is losing hamster after hamster after hamster and thinking like, I'm not a good pet owner. Like my animals keep dying. Like I really internalized this. So when we got the rats and they were longer lived and hardier and they were also nicer to engage with, more gregarious.
Hamsters don't want to engage with you unless you're giving them a treat.
Like, not usually.
Whereas rats want to do things.
Yeah,
they
absolutely
want to be with you and they're very intelligent and they're not as nocturnal. Like they are nocturnal, but not as nocturnal as a hamster. Like they'll wake up during the day and play with you. You know, I've had them on my shoulder watching TV for hours and, they just run around, they hide inside your shirt, they pop out. And
they're so fun.
Yeah, they're just a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh.
And mine were litter trained. I could put a litter box down and my rat would leave me to go into their litter box and come back.
That's
so
awesome.
I got my rats from a breeder who bred for show rats. So she was very conscientious and they came to me litter trained.
There you go. And now you know there's a show world for rats.
Yes.
That surprises me, but not so much. Because, I mean, I know there's show cats and there's all sorts of great ways to show off your animals and bunny competitions and this, that, and the other. I didn't know that there was
rat shows. Show your rats as well.
I would love to go to a rat show. We should find a rat show.
We should find a rat show. Yes.
So I think rat shows are probably harder to find than dog shows.
Yes.
But I would say dog shows are a great place to start. You know, if you're not sure, and I was starting to make a point that you remember things very differently in childhood.
Yes.
And you might not remember how much work went into that dog. You know, your parents probably did a lot of work training that dog and making sure that they were a well-behaved member of the family. Or maybe they did. Maybe you have some crazy memories from childhood chasing the dog down the street through the fields and whatnot. Who knows? But I wouldn't base things on what I grew up with either without having a serious sit-down conversation with my parents at least, which unfortunately isn't possible for many of us. So finding out more about the breeds that you're interested in is so important, so important. And I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that are really important to pay attention to when you're bringing a dog into the house so that you can set yourself up for this wonderful existence with your dog. So definitely match the breed so you can have 10 or 15 wonderful years with your dog where you match each other's energy, you match each other's, intensity for activity and doing things. Because if you have a dog that is frustrated, that's going to be a really awful relationship.
Right.
You know, they can get destructive. They can get over the top. They can, you can have all sorts of unwanted behaviors come out with a dog who is not having their needs met. Mm-hmm. So
one thing that I like to mention to people when I speak with people who are thinking about getting a dog and they're wondering what dog breed should I get? Because there's hundreds of dog breeds and there's hundreds of mixes of dog breeds out there is take the dog breed that you're interested in or the combination that you're interested in and look at their heritage. what were those dogs specifically bred to do? What are the genetics?
Yeah.
Because genetics don't disappear.
No, you cannot train away genetics.
Exactly.
And they don't go away on their own. So right. If you get, what does this mean? If you get a Jack Russell Terrier, what are you thinking about genetically with that dog?
Genetically, that terrier was bred to go to ground, which means to dig around and go into holes and to basically get rid of vermin by killing the vermin.
Yeah.
So a Jack Russell has been bred for generations and generations and generations to take on a rat mm-hmm. or take on a groundhog or take on a badger. So they're tough dogs.
Yeah, they need to be.
Right?
They would be ill-equipped to do the job that they were bred for if they were worried or soft or not willing to, answer to the fight, right?
Right, yeah. So a farmer who has Jack Russells, 300 years ago for vermin control, he's not going to keep a dog that is afraid of fighting.
Yeah,
he's going to keep the feistiest ones. So he wasn't worried about pet temperament. He was worried about a working temperament.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even though we've gotten away from those sports, that's still in the dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and there's a lot of effort to preserve those characteristics and breeds. You know, we love our breeds for a reason, right? I have very specific and pointed reasons for loving tollers and going back to the Nova Scotia Duck Tolling Retriever over and over and over again. You know, sometimes I think, maybe I'll get a lab. You know, it'd be fun to get a lab, or maybe I'll get a Malinois, or maybe, you know, there's a lot of times where I think, I like this breed. I would love to play around with that breed. But I continue to come back to the toller because the traits of the toller really match me.
Right.
And I really love the traits of the toller and I'm not good with change. Those are the reasons. Change is hard. I like having my little red dogs. Right. But one day I might have a different breed that I bring home with the dogs. But I like to have two. So
I bet too you would stick maybe within the retriever group.
I probably would.
Would you? Or at least the hunting breeds?
Yes. I always say if I wanted something a little bit tougher, I'd probably end up going with a Chessie because I love doing field work.
Right.
And I love bringing out that drive in the dog. And there's you can only compete with certain breeds in field work in hunt tests or working certificate tests, etc. So
Yeah.
What are some of the breeds that really appeal to you?
I like dogs that love to interact with me. Mm-hmm. So, and I know I can get that from different breeds, but I like dogs that want to do things that are like, let's go, let's do stuff. And so I admire a dog that's been, a herding breed or a working breed that's been bred to get up in the morning and go out and spend all day with the cows or spend all day, patrolling, back in the olden days with like a game warden, a poacher, I guess they would call them, like the people that looked after the poachers. Those dogs wake up and they go all day. And I really like that.
Yeah, me too.
I really like that. Go. A sluggish, lazy dog wouldn't be.
Wouldn't
be as much fun for me.
Yeah. I am down to one dog right now because I lost Reggie late in 2023. So I sort of ended up with a singular dog, which is great, but I'm waiting for another puppy. And of course I'm looking for another toller, but like thinking about that lifestyle thing on Sunday of this week, I ended up staying home on my property and I have 12 acres and it's a recent acquisition. So I've been exploring different areas of it. I keep finding different little nooks and crannies and different little ponds that I wasn't expecting to see. There's a lot of wetland on the property. So there's all these little awesome areas and I'm excited to set up field training setups in them. So I've been exploring a lot. And Sunday, it was such a beautiful day here. Very unseasonably warm in Ontario right now in February.
Yes, we're having early spring, it feels like. But I know there's going to be second winter is going to be coming.
Absolutely. And I spent, I think, probably 7 hours on Sunday just wandering around my property. Right. I took a little break midway through the day because I was a little bit chilly. And we came inside and, we had some lunch and then we went right back out again. And I thought, if I had, not to single out toy poodles or anything like that, but if I had a little toy poodle that didn't like to get their feet wet, this would be a terrible life for that dog.
Right.
You know, when I came home at the end of the day, I had burrs in my hair. My mucker boots were covered in mud and water. You know, Ned was breaking through the ice to go swimming. Like It was a lot of mess.
Right.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I had a blast. Ned had a blast. Like, we just fit in that way, right?
Yes.
We have no problem getting lost for an entire day wandering around and just exploring the world, you know?
And as something you mentioned, too, about the coat, Ned's coat is built for that.
Yeah.
And he will dry off and shed the dirt.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the way he is. But some of these mixes that we see, you're mixing two different coat types. And these coats just tend to mat when they get wet. They don't shed dirt. And, you know, if you had one of these dogs and it had a lot of coat, you might have came back to a huge grooming mess.
Yeah.
And now instead of just enjoying, you know, the evening relaxing, you're madly trying to detangle, get mats out, get burrs out, just because the coat type doesn't mesh that lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot more with lifestyle than just thinking about the energy level. That is an excellent point.
Right.
And I mean, with Ned, he was a mess, but he was dry.
Right.
I mean, that's another thing. Like, he goes in on his own to say, okay, this ice is in my way. Get out of my way so I can go swimming. Like, he's happy to be in there.
Right.
He's not cold at all. He comes out, he shakes, and he's practically dry because he's purpose-built for that.
Right.
Right? He's purpose-built to do that sort of work in the oceans on Nova Scotia, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
It is something that is suitable for him, which is great. If I had a dog that had a really short coat, you know, if I had a Whippet, for example, and I liked exploring in the winter, my Whippet's probably not going to be the best breed for
that. No, it's not going to be very happy.
Because they're not cold, hardy dogs, you know? And I love Whippets and I love toy poodles, so nothing against either of those breeds at all.
Right.
And I've seen some pretty good mucker toy poodles as well that really like to get down and dirty, so they might fit, but having said that.
But
and
yeah,
huge.
Back to what I mentioned, too, is how I like a dog that's go, 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 and that's because it can fit my lifestyle because I'm a dog trainer and I can bring my dogs to work. I can spend tons and tons of time training. I can spend my weekends at dog shows and doing dog things. If I had young children and a busy family and a different career where my dog wasn't welcome or I'm working 12-hour shifts, I wouldn't pick a go, go, go dog. I would say, you know what? I need something, you know, family friendly, far more low key, a dog that's more content to, you know, not go out and do all this work.
Yeah.
So even though I like that, it's because my lifestyle suits it as well. So if I was only going to do stuff with my dog on the weekend, I wouldn't get a go, go, go dog because go, go, go dogs need it 7 days a week.
Yeah.
And I am fortunate enough to have a lifestyle that I can appease that dog.
Absolutely. So if you have a full-time job and you like to come home at the end of the day and put your feet up and watch TV with some takeout, a busy dog is not going to be the dog for you. Even if you're super busy on the weekends, the dogs don't identify weekend versus weekday. They have needs through the week. And a working dog, until you've really lived with the energy of a working dog, it's hard to even put into words. They could go to work with you full time all day long and keep up and be happy with that.
Right.
So, you know, if you are, you like to be a couch potato through the week and you're a weekend warrior, you need to get a dog that matches that okay. That's okay with just going for a walk around the block through the week or maybe playing a bit in the yard through the week and then doing a little bit more on the weekends. And if you're somebody who really just likes to be a couch potato all the time, then that's something you need to take into account as well. I mean, it is going to be, hopefully, if you're lucky, 12 to 15 years with a dog who has needs, and we need to meet those needs. Mm-hmm. So if they don't fit within our lifestyle, that is definitely going to be a tumultuous relationship at best.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, lifestyle is huge for sure.
Another thing to look at, too, is size.
Yeah.
I don't think some people realize the responsibility and the added expense of a giant, large breed. Just they eat more. They eat like triple the amount of a small dog. Their medications are more. You need a bigger crate. Everything needs to be bigger. And there's a huge expense with a large breed. And there's also, if that dog gets very ill and you have to get it to vet emergency, can you pick it up?
Yeah. If you can't ride it, or put it in your car, are you going to be out of luck?
Right. Yes. Yes. That's a good one. Yes. Or, you know, a lot of I notice new builds have so many stairs. They're trying to put many houses on one tiny property.
You're right.
So there's so many stairs. And these great big dogs, if they have any joint issues or that, they can't get up and down these stairs. Are you able to carry that dog outside to go to the bathroom?
Oh, that's a really good
thing. Things like that when they get old. And I see some of these great big dogs and I think, how are these dogs going to handle stairs?
Yeah.
If, when they get
old. And as they get older, they're going to have to navigate those. Oh, yes. That's a good thought.
Right.
I know a lot of people who utilize ramps with their older dogs, things like that. So, I mean, you can certainly adapt, but are you willing? Are you ready? And you have to consider, I would say, life expectancy as well.
Yes.
I've lived with a large breed dog, Quincy, my Rottweiler. Right. And sadly, she was gone shortly before her 10th birthday. And that's reasonable for a life expectancy of a Rottweiler. Mm-hmm. My Tollers are longer lived. I've knock on wood, I've had longer lived Tollers so far. I've been lucky. My youngest to pass was 11, which was devastating as well. It was still too young, but I've had a 14 and a 15-year-old Toller that were healthy and, quite robust right up until the end. So hopefully that trend continues, because that's a nice thing. But it's something to consider as well, how how versatile are you in terms of bouncing back from that, how it hurts at any point. I mean, it's never going to be an easy thing, but there's a big difference in the feeling that you get losing a 14 or 15-year-old dog than there is when you lose a dog earlier than that.
Yes, I've lost a 2-year-old dog and a 6-year-old dog. And
so
it's heartbreaking. Yeah. It's heartbreaking. And it's very tough to, I've still, Atari was 6 when she passed away and about a year and a half ago. And I still haven't, you never recover. Yeah. You just learn to live without them. But I have struggled a lot more with losing her at the age of 6.
Oh, I can imagine. It's devastating. Mm. I think that when we talk about costs, I think it's important that, yes, we talk about food, but we need to talk about monthly medicating, right? When we do things like flea and tick preventatives, those are more expensive medications. When the more you go up in weight, the larger the quantity of medication, the more expense you're going to have for that. Food bill, of course.
Yes. And dog food is very expensive. It's it's not like it used to be. I bet I spend for Honda, he's on a prescription diet for his pancreatitis, but I think I spend about upwards $60-something every 5 weeks on his food.
Okay. And he's a little dog.
He weighs 12 pounds.
Yeah. So multiply that by a whole bunch. Yeah. Carol had a Great Dane that was very fit and very active and eating 14 cups of food a day in his prime. So, I mean, there's a huge difference between a half a cup twice a day and 7 cups twice a day when it comes to the quantity and the expense of that. Mm-hmm. And of course, we want to do the best we can for our dogs. So we're not usually buying them the most cost-effective food that we can find on the Walmart shelf. We go for a good quality food and that costs money.
Right.
Yeah. It really does. Mm-hmm. So definitely. I mean, all of those expenses are up. Right. It's going to cost more to spay or neuter. It's going to cost more to transport the dog because you need to have more space.
Morph to professionally groom too. Yes. With all the poodle crosses that we see, they need professional grooming and groomers are going to charge, every 6 to 8 weeks they should be in, and it's going to be well over $100, well over.
Yeah. And we see a lot of images of the doodles and the poodle crosses and whatnot that the groomers have just had to shave them down completely because maintenance is something that we should talk about as well.
Right.
And it's so important. If you get a lab, you don't have that much maintenance to do.
Right.
A Whippet type of coat, you don't have a lot of maintenance to do with that coat.
Right.
When you're dealing with an Afghan, which I know is a breed that you
love. I
love
Afghan hounds. Yes.
You could probably spend your lifetime brushing with Ned. Tollers they definitely have some grooming requirements to them. I've had a mixed bag with Tollers. I've had some Tollers with less coat and less grooming needs, but I still do nails weekly and I still make sure, everything's clean and tidy and whatnot. And I've had some Tollers that have an abundance of coat. And Ned, I have to do his coat in shifts now because it's just so much work when he's shedding.
Right.
So I'll do half of the dog here and a half of the dog there because it's a lot.
I remember even doing that with Atari. It's like, I'll do her left side today. And then a couple days from now, I'll do her right side. I used to get her to lie down to brush. So she'd lie down on the grooming table or in the grass outside. Perfect. And I would just brush one side of her. And then off she goes, half brushed. And
Part of my weekend is usually grooming, dogs. I usually tidy them up and do their nails and whatnot on the weekend. So on Saturday, I started grooming Ned and I got like one quarter of him done. And then I realized, you know what? It's so nice outside. We're going back out now. He's going to be filthy and dirty and muddy again. And then it was supposed to be nice on the Sunday. And I already told you what I did all Sunday long. So I ended up grooming like his left butt. Cheek and thigh, and then realized that it was probably a futile effort and I should probably save it for Sunday evening.
Right.
And then I didn't get back to it Sunday evening. So now if you look at him from behind, he has two distinctly different shapes.
I'm going to have to check out his buttock. Yes.
Very cute. And I keep pointing it out to Kip and laughing. Like, look. Kip doesn't really get it. Like, oh, okay. I think he just placates me. He's like, yeah, I see it.
But
I see it.
Right, yeah.
But I can see it.
Right,
yes. Every time I look at it, it makes me laugh. Oh, my goodness.
I tried to thin out Atari's butt hair one time, and I thought I was doing a good job of sculpting, but once she walked away, it was like, oh, what have I done to her butt?
See, there's another thing. Do you have the knowledge
to
properly sculpt? Do you have the knowledge to properly groom your dogs? And some dogs take an extreme amount of grooming. Right?
Oh, they
some
do.
Some dogs, you can do hand stripping with them. You can do clipping with them. Clipping as in like taking a pair of hair clippers and actually shaving down the coat.
Right, and hand scissoring. I know it like breeds like Bedlington Terriers. Their face is all hand scissored to get that lamb-like appearance.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. That's a really interesting appearance of those dogs. I know you like it. We've had this conversation before. Yes.
I don't know why they're not more popular Bedlingtons.
Yeah, because they're funny looking.
And they probably have a lot of grooming.
They're lovely, lovely. I actually had a couple of Bedlingtons that lived next door to me at an old house I lived in, and they were quite a nice breed. They were... I haven't had a chance to really get to know too many Bedlingtons.
No, neither have I.
Because we don't see a lot of them. They're a fairly rare breed.
Yes.
But I got to know them and they were quite lovely dogs. Right, and incidentally, they weren't in that show.
Oh, I would keep mine in a little lamb clip just like that. It's like my Afghan and show clip.
It's such an interesting clip. Right. That's for sure.
I'm sure
there's a purpose for it.
Yes. What I should do is get portraits of those dogs. I should take pictures of them and then just put them on my wall and say, these are my pets.
There you go. There you go. You know what? You could just like take a big amount of clippings from a dog, take a picture and pretend that's your pet.
Yes. Or you can get people that do that felting.
Oh,
have you seen that?
Yeah.
It's felting and they can felt up a little dog for you. And then I could pat it and everything.
That sounds wrong. Felt up a dog.
Yeah.
They can make a dog out of felt.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I don't know what it's made out of, but I see them and they look real.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I've seen them in tollers before too and thought like, how do people make such a wonderful thing?
My attention span for crafts is extremely short. I've gone to those paint nights before and I've had a blast, but mine's all done and everyone else is still working on theirs. And I'm like, I'm long done and I'm having a glass of wine. And then I'm looking, realizing like people's are looking great and mine looks very kindergartenish. And I just like to, and that's it.
Oh my gosh. Just rush through it.
Yeah, rush through it.
Get to the wine.
Yeah.
Get to the fun part.
Yeah, and then sit and watch everyone else afterwards, realizing I've gone terribly wrong.
I feel like I have to say now at this point, this week's jokes are brought to you by our students, Stephanie and Clover.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Thanks for the cookies, Steph.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie.
Apparently, a couple of weeks ago, we put out a podcast and we put out a call for cookies. I don't remember this. Swanee remembers this, but I don't really remember it.
So I'm going to
have to go back and look. Send cookies right away.
And yesterday, a package arrived at McCann's.
A package of cookies.
And it was cookies for us. Thank you, Steph. And they're delicious. We've already eaten quite a few.
Yes.
Thank you.
We got our sugar rush to come on the podcast. Yes. So now I think we need to put out a call for like a new toller puppy. I need to put out a call for some money. What else do we want?
One of those felted creatures.
One of those felted creatures. Please send care of Swanee and Shannon.
No. A felted creature.
Seriously, very sweet.
Yes, thank you.
We're just joking.
We're joking. Don't send us that.
Yeah, we don't need anybody else to send us lovely gifts, but that was
Stephanie,
so thoughtful.
Yes. Yes.
So fun. Thank you. And we enjoyed our cookies so far.
Yes. And it was a good smile for the day. Yes. Everyone at McCann's had a good smile about it.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. But so fun. We have the best students.
Back to thinking about grooming though.
Oh yeah. We're back to thinking about dogs. That's a good idea.
One of the things, and I notice it in class too, we have lots and lots of doodle type breeds, which are poodle mixes and they're lovely and they're fun and I adore them and they're so cute. But I notice people often only brush their top coats. Yeah. They don't realize they have to lift and get right to the skin. And often when I'm patting them, I can feel they're matted underneath.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've mentioned it to a few people and I said, you know, your groomer's going to point this out to you. And I know this because Honda, my Chinese crested powder puff, exact same thing. He will mat at the skin if I don't lift his coat and brush. So lift the coat and brush. So do have your groomer show you how to groom, or the breeder, a good breeder should show you how to groom. And then your groomer doesn't have to shave them down to the skin to get rid of those mats.
Yeah, and these are really good questions to ask before committing to the dog. Mm-hmm. You know, what are the grooming requirements? How much do you feed the adult of your breed? And this is especially true, I would say, when you get into things like doodles. Because it's a mixed breed, there's not going to be the same amount of consistency that you'll be able to see if, say, you went to a purebred dog, a golden retriever, a Labrador retriever. Now you're bringing in poodle mix as well. You have sort of variety and versatility in temperament and workability and all sorts of things in each of those breeds individually. And then when you bring them together, you might get individual traits from each dog. You know, it's sort of a bit more of a mixed breed. So... Mm-hmm. Literally, mixed bag. Yes, I was going to say mixed bag, and then it came out mixed breed, which is literally what I'm talking about.
So right.
I don't know why I needed to say it. But it's so important to talk to the person that's bringing those dogs into the world, because they will know them best. Mm-hmm. And if they're fairly new to doodles and doodle breeding, they might not have the answers for you. So if you're brand new to doodles and the breeder's brand new to doodles, you know, that might not be a match made in heaven to find all the answers that you want. It might be. I mean, maybe this doodle breeder has done gobs of research and knows their stuff inside out and backwards, but chances are they probably just started their breeding journey and they probably have a lot further to go in terms of their learning. So maybe that's a good reason to go with a more experienced
breeder. I'm getting a golden doodle, I'm going to go to someone who's been breeding them for many generations and can predict coat type, predict temperament, and just, you know, has done quality health checks on their stock as well. You just don't know what you're getting.
Yes, absolutely. And we actually did an episode on how to find a great dog, like how to find a dog that's going to be healthy, have a good temperament. We talked about differences between deciding to rescue and deciding to go with a breeder. You know, a good heritage breeder is a very different thing than a backyard breeder or a puppy mill. So, you know the facts before you get into those things and make sure that you're supporting the right thing, because supporting the wrong thing, of course, will often lead to more rescues. Mm-hmm. And supporting the right thing, it is a fallacy that people believe that supporting good breeders will lead to more rescue. That is absolutely not the case.
Because good breeders often have the litter spoken for long before it's ever been bred.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing worse. I'll see like friends or acquaintances on Facebook and they've bred their family dog and now they got six puppies and they've been pushing these puppies since they've been 5 weeks and now they're 10 weeks and still they haven't sold one. And at 12 weeks, they still haven't sold one. Mm-hmm. And now they're at the SPCA or they're, you know, who knows what's happening.
What a shame.
Yes. And
what a shame.
Yeah. I would never breed a dog without having people who are saying, yes, I want one of your puppies.
Yeah. And I would also commit to the lifetime of that dog. Yes, you know, if that dog is 8 years old and you can't take care of it, if that dog is 11 years old and you can't take care of it, it comes back to me. It doesn't go to a shelter, you know. So I need to be in a position, if I'm going to breed, I need to be in a position where I can follow through with that.
Yes.
Or I have plans in place so that somebody else can follow through with that in my place. You know, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow or, you know, eaten by a wayward bear. All those bears running through the neighborhood. You know, you just never know.
Right, yes.
Anything that you produce in this world really should be your responsibility right through until the end, even though somebody else is buying that dog. You know, and this is the commitment that you get with a breeder, with a good heritage breeder.
Right.
This is the commitment that you get. And this is these are not my original ideas. You know, when I came into Tollers, these are the things that I learned. Oh my gosh, like these people are wonderful. They care so much about their dogs, blah, 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 like on and on and on. And I already saw back then, even though it was really hard to source Tollers, I already saw how important it was to the breeders to make sure that that dog was taken care of for its life, and how important it was to the breeder to make sure that the Toller itself was preserved as a breed, and generations moving forward were always an improvement on generations that were already existing. So such important stuff.
Because it's unfortunate that a lot of people can call themselves breeders, but they're not good breeders.
Well,
like,
it's one of those catch-all terms, right? Yes. It really, that's why good breeders have started adopting the term heritage breeder.
Yes.
Because they need to differentiate, because the idea that, you know, the adopt don't shop idea, I'm telling you 100% from my perspective and in my opinion, you are absolutely A-OK to do the thing that works best for you. And we've done rescue episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not sure what it's going to entail, bringing home a rescue potentially, or if you've got what you need to have to be able to work through that and to be able to make it a successful partnership for both you and the dog, you know, that's a great episode to listen to if you look back in the archives of the McCann Dogs podcast. And then make your plans based on what you want. If you've got your heart set on rescue, that is fabulous.
Right,
there's nothing wrong with that. And if you've got your heart set on buying a purebred lab because that's what you've always wanted, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just go to the right people to make sure that the dog is coming from a situation that is not supporting, you know, dogs going back into rescue situation and making sure that it is a breeder who is willing to support you through the journey as well. Because you just never know what's going to come up. I mean, Ned just had his little prostate explosion where I ended up being forced to neuter him at just shy of 7, which is fine. Like, you know, he needed to be neutered. He needed to be neutered because he was having a health issue. But the first person I reached out to was his breeder. You know, the first person I reached out to when Jaden, my first toller, had his first seizure, and that's a whole other story, but he had his first seizure, and luckily he was about 5 years seizure free at the time of his death. So, you know, we found a solution for this, but when he had his first seizure, the first thing I did was reached out to his breeder. You know, do you know of anything in the lines? Is there anything that you can tell me that might help with my vets diagnosing what's going on here, et cetera,
and
et cetera?
And the breeder wants to know.
Absolutely.
The breeder wants to know because, yes. It's funny, a lot of times when we have people who have a dog and they have an issue or that, and we say, well, ask your breeder. They can't. The breeder's no interest anymore, or once you gave them that money, the breeder drops out.
So that would be more of a backyard breeder type of situation, or a puppy mill type
of situation.
Like, knowing where your puppy is coming from and how they're being raised, it's such a big deal.
I love going to the breeder, a good breeder who shows you photos of generations back, and you can just see the pride and the love, and they're showing all the documentation that their elbows are great, their hips are great. And I found too, with when I got my Saluki Cowboy, Salukis are an unusual breed and they're unusual looking, and I'd always wanted one since I was a little girl. Growing up with a dog show family, I was exposed to all kinds of different breeds, spending basically growing up at dog shows, and I always wanted a Saluki. And I remember having Cowboy and thinking, like, I have a piece of living history. Like, this is such a historical old breed, and I have a piece of living history in
my
house.
That's so true.
And that's how I feel almost about any purebred dog that's well-bred. Yes. You have living history, especially if it's an old breed that's been around forever.
Absolutely.
And Salukis are very ancient. In the Bible, greyhounds are mentioned, but it's actually Salukis that they're referring to, as Salukis used to be called Persian greyhounds.
Okay.
And the name got changed to Saluki.
Oh, so, that's neat. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're the only breed, I believe, that's mentioned in the Bible.
Ah, all right.
So they're, and they
Persian
found them.
Persian greyhounds, I didn't know that.
They found them in the tombs of, in ancient Egypt, they found them.
Okay.
And they're just like they are, they're living history.
Do you need equipment for your new puppy and you're not quite sure where to start? Check out McCannDogs.store, where we have a collection of purpose-built training equipment that's going to be perfect for you and your new puppy. In terms of a Saluki and their sociability, where would you place them on the scale? If it was 1 to 10, where like 10 is the lab, the friendliest lab in the world, and 1 is like a Russian terrier that's bred to be fairly aloof.
I would say a Saluki is 2.
Maybe. Okay.
And there is variance within the breed. Cowboy was very friendly, but
she was sweetie.
She would come up to you and be your friend, but she was very loyal to me. So the moment I turned to walk away, she was zap right back to me.
Gotcha.
But that took me a long, like I put my heart and soul into that dog. So she was a little bit un-Saluki-like possibly. Generally, when you go to a dog show, the Salukis aren't going to give you the time of day.
Nope.
So when I stand at ringside with other Saluki breeders, their dogs 100% completely ignore me. They might even shrink away from me if I go to pat them. They might come up and sniff me and then just turn away. you know, there's exceptions to every breed, but Salukis are very aloof and very not interested in people in general.
Yeah. Tollers actually have the word aloof in their statement what they are supposed to be as well. Their temperament lists them as an aloof breed. So I would say they're probably a 4 to a 5 in the friendliness scale, where your average lab who loves everybody in the world is a 10.
Right.
I've had various temperaments in my tollers, a couple that were very suspicious, and I would say borderline too soft to be called aloof, just not necessarily the strongest tempered. But the strong tempered tollers that I have had, I would say they were perfectly aloof. And basically that would mean that either Jaden or Ned would walk up to you and go, "Hey, how's it going? All right, see you later," and then want nothing else to do with you, basically.
Yeah, they kind of just come up, check you out, and okay, who are you? What are you? Okay, I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, they love their people. They absolutely love their people. Yep. Like every day when Kip pulls into the driveway and Ned realizes it's Kip home, there's this big dance and lots of toller roos. But anybody else, he's like, "Hey, how's it? Oh, yeah, okay, you're
right." And that's true. When I come to visit you, Ned will come up and he sniffs me. I pat him a few pats, and then basically that's it.
Yeah,
he's unless like, "Okay, we're eating, Christine's then
he's,
here."
He's like, just hanging out.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that this is something that a lot of the times we don't talk about enough is the sociability of the dog. Mm-hmm. And if you get, so say for example, you decide that you've fallen madly in love with the Great Pyrenees, which is a flock guardian dog.
Right.
And those dogs are bred to be incredibly suspicious of everyone and everything other than their immediate pack.
Right.
Right. So you love a Great Pyrenees and that's great. Or, you know, maybe it's an Erasure or a Caucasian Ovacharka or something like that. Yeah. One of those flock guardian breeds that are quite lovely to look at.
Right.
But they really are the stay at home, watch everybody with suspicion. You know, if you have this dog in your house, you're going to need to do a lot of work making sure that you train it and making sure that you socialize it and making sure that you give it clear boundaries about what's appropriate and what's not. Because genetically, and we talked about how you can't train out genetics. You can train around genetics and you can create all sorts of structure surrounding genetics that will help you to ensure that those genetics don't come out at the wrong time and in the wrong way, but they're always going to be there. Right. So if you are somebody who likes to entertain, you know, you have people over for the party all the time and you have Great Pyrenees as your breed of dog that you love, you're going to have to do some work. You're going to have to be aware of the innate nature of this dog and you're going to have to be aware of overriding that so that that dog can fit into your world.
Right.
So things like that are huge. Whereas if you are that person that loves to socialize and loves to have people over and you get a lab, that dog's going to fit in like probably. I mean, your average well-bred lab is just going to love that. Right. Yes. Oh my gosh, more people. Oh my gosh, more people. Come in. You know, somebody goes to break into the house and a lab goes, "Come in. Take my TV as long as you give me a cookie while you're doing it. I'm good with it."
Right.
Whereas a Great Pyrenees, you know, your great aunt Ida comes over for a visit and that great peer is not going to want to accept great aunt Ida into the house. Right. So does that dog have enough training now to understand that when you say, "Hey, great aunt Ida is fine to come out here," that that's going to be a safe situation? Or, you know, saving that, do you have a space to keep the dog so that they can be safe and so that great aunt Ida can be safe? Because of course, you know, we don't want any accidents for great aunt Ida.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And the dog may be great with your children because they're part of the pack. But how about when your kids are, you know, early teens and they start bringing over friends and, you know, especially boys at that time get roughhousing and, you know, how's the dog going to perceive that?
Yes, absolutely. And none of these problems are insurmountable if you have the right information and the right drive to do the work. But they are going to be things that you're going to need to tackle. So if you get a German Shepherd, they're going to be naturally suspicious. That's what they're bred to do. Right. They're bred to guard. They're bred to keep the family safe. They're used as protection dogs in a lot of situations with more training, of course. You know, the natural tendency of the dog in terms of sociability is a big factor as well.
Yes.
So this is definitely something that I would do a lot of reading and research into and really look critically at my own life.
Yes.
You know, do I have the lifestyle that this dog is not going to be constantly stressed? if my lifestyle doesn't match the dog's, do I have the chops to train what I need to train?
Right.
Do I have the desire to go out and find mm-hmm. the information that I need to find? Or am I just going to cross my fingers and hope for the best? Am I that type of person?
Yes.
Like, know who you are. There's nothing wrong with any of these personality traits. We're all different.
Right. Yes.
We all have different habits. Mm-hmm. Our dogs all have different habits.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with any of it. Mm-hmm. But if you get a mismatch, it's going to be a struggle for you, for the dog.
Right. Or if you get a breed that, like some of the rarer herding breeds are quite, just to put it bluntly, freaky, their temperaments.
Yep.
And you might go, you know, I really love that dog. And then you get it and it's freaky and you can't change it. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
Like there's some of these, yeah, very primitive herding breeds. They're just not been bred for these big social situations.
Yeah,
I was at a pool party this summer and I didn't know the people well, but I had been invited and they had two dogs that they had rescued from, I think maybe the Dominican Republic, and they were products of the street dogs, like hotcakes.
Gotcha.
And they were letting these dogs run loose at this big pool party. Those dogs were terrified. They were not enjoying themselves. They were afraid. And of course, people are drinking and patting them and trying to pat them.
Bad.
And these dogs were spook barking, backing away. And my heart broke for these dogs. And I think the owners thought the dogs were having fun or this was good for them.
Oh,
and it wasn't. I could see those dogs were afraid and not enjoying themselves.
Oh, yeah, that's unfortunate. And I mean, in that situation, do you think that the owners were aware that the dogs were not enjoying themselves?
I think they're completely oblivious.
Oh, dear.
Completely oblivious.
That's too bad.
Yes.
That's too bad. So, yeah, I mean, things like that are really important to think about. If you are in that situation where you love to entertain and you love to have people over, if you're going into a rescue situation, first I would foster and I would see how that dog fits mm-hmm. into your lifestyle. I would make sure I'd got as much history as I possibly could on the breed. And if I was looking for, or as much history as I could on the dog, somebody's probably fostered the dog before. Mm-hmm. If the dog was basically just shipped right into the country and then outsourced to a home right away, that's a bit of an icky situation.
And I
would be a little wary of that.
Be careful of rescues who glorify the dog too, or like sometimes you'll read or write up about a dog and everything is positive and there's no way everything is positive.
This is a hard thing.
Yes.
This is such a hard thing because doing the right thing isn't always the easy thing, right? And and of course, people who are in the rescue business, their heart goes into this and they just want the dog to have a home.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's at the expense of safety or comfort or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be for the human or the dog, it's not a good situation.
Right.
And honesty is so important in mm-hmm. those scenarios. You know, if the dog has potential for being worried about certain situations, that new family needs to know that 100%.
Yes.
And if you feel like there's not the right amount of information coming to you, then I would walk away from that situation for sure.
Right. Yes.
I definitely would.
Yeah.
Find out as much as you possibly can, you know, even if it's even in a rescue situation, mm-hmm. it is something that you need to do your due diligence.
Right. Yes.
Like, yes, that dog needs help, mm-hmm. but are you going to be the right person to help it? Is it going to be the right dog to fit into your lifestyle? Mm-hmm. Are you going to end up heartbroken in a month when you want to send this dog back mm-hmm. and the rescue is no longer there for you? You know, what's the ultimate scenario, right?
I had a friend who wanted a jogging partner and they wanted to adopt a dog, rescue a dog. And I, you know, okay, that's all well and good. And I knew they were going to be out in public walking, jogging and running this dog. So I said to them, make sure you get a dog that doesn't have a history of being reactive on leash.
Right.
And, they found a dog they really liked and they said to the rescue, like, can we take the dog for a walk on leash and have, because I had said, and get other dogs in the distance to see how this dog is.
Yeah.
And the rescue would not let them do that.
Dear.
But they kept telling the person the dog was fine with other dogs and it was loose playing. And sure enough, it was fine with the other dogs. And they decided that he would take the dog. Sure enough, the moment they got it on a leash and tried to walk it, the dog was going nuts at other dogs.
Dear.
And the rescue wouldn't take the dog back.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was a horrific situation. The rescue, I think they knew that if they put that dog on a leash, these people were not going to adopt.
Yeah.
And I always remember that and think, oh, if they'd only just persisted and walked away.
Yeah. That was really good advice that you offered them regardless mm-hmm. because we know that behavior on leash and behavior off leash is extremely different in a lot of dogs.
Yes.
So that was great advice that you offered. It's too bad they didn't take it, but it was definitely good advice to offer. But I mean, really, same questions to ask from a breeder as well. Talk about the parents, talk about their temperaments and their sociability and whatnot. Even if you are getting a lab, the trusted lab that's friendly with everybody, there are some lines that maybe aren't so much.
Right.
And then there's some outcrosses that are happening in labs right now that are being called silver labs, which if you do some research, you will find out there's no such thing as a silver lab, unfortunately. They're quite lovely to look at, but they are definitely a cross. And there tends to be some health and temperament issues that are connected with that color. So,
same with French Bulldogs. You're getting the fluffy French Bulldogs.
Yeah, which, fluffy and Merle. And
And so, you know, some people are saying, no, it's a recessive gene. But even if it is a recessive gene, if you keep breeding dogs with recessive genes together, you're breeding health issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and here's the thing. If you're looking at a breed that already has a significant amount of health issues,
like a French Bulldog,
and now you're compounding it with people who are breeding for a specific coat type or color that is not properly recognized in the breed, there's usually a reason that those colors are not recognized.
Right.
You know, introducing Merle into a breed, for example, can cause all sorts of issues because breeding Merle to Merle can cause deafness.
Yes.
So there's all sorts of color genetic things that are important to note.
And white, like white boxers can often be deaf. Yeah. White Dobermans can have horrible health issues. Yeah. White Rottweilers.
I didn't even know there was such a thing as a white Rottweiler. Yes, I've never heard of that.
Yeah,
wow.
I've seen I saw a white
I've seen white Dobes, but white Rottweiler.
White Rottweiler. But white boxers are quite prevalent. And I would stay away from one with a 10-foot pole. I'm sorry if people, you know, they're beautiful. But allergies. I've seen horrific allergies in white boxers, skin allergies.
Color genetics definitely count for a lot, and they can be hard to wade through as well. Like, I'm still trying to understand color genetics in tollers because you can get all sorts of recessives like tries and whatnot, which is definitely different for the breed. There's a buff color that comes out and whatnot. There's some health issues sometimes connected with the buff gene as well. You know, there's all sorts of things that a well-versed breeder will know why. We avoid Merle in Frenchies, for example.
Right. Yes.
You know, they've seen what comes out of that. And Frenchies can already be a breed with some health issues to begin with. So I would be very, very careful about stepping outside of that box. And
and think of it too, for ourselves.
For ourselves.
Health, especially as I'm getting older, I'm getting wiser. Like, health is so important for us as humans. You know, when I wake up and feel lousy, I don't have a great day sometimes, but I love waking up and feeling good and my elbow's not sore, my knee's not sore. So same with our dogs.
Yes.
So let's breed dogs that are structurally healthy and say, you know what? I don't care that the dog's not the color I want. It's not this weird color. It's structurally healthy. Yes. It's not going to be sore. It's going to live a fabulous life rather than getting the bizarre colored dog that's sickly and it's not going to feel well, or the dog with the super squishy face that can't breathe.
Yeah, like, well, health, and you fall in love with it regardless, right? Even if you realize 2 months into it, oh no, like, I'm gonna have some health issues, or the vet's already saying, okay, this is a problem, you don't love that dog any less yet.
No.
Like, it pretty much the second they come home, maybe even before they come home, we fall in love with the idea of them, and then they come home and we fall absolutely head over heels with them. So, you know, the devastation of losing them at a young age because of something that could have been predicted with a little bit more research. I mean, that's a tough way to learn a lesson. So let's move on from that. But hopefully that impacts people enough to think a little bit outside of the box of these designer dogs that are getting shown all over the place these days, because there's a lot that's coming out that is really just about creating something unique and charging a ridiculous amount of money for it.
People are like, there's two varieties of corgis, the Pembroke Welsh Corgi, which is the more popular one that Queen Elizabeth had. And then there's the Cardigan Welsh Corgi, which is a breed that I used to have.
The less popular one that Swanee had.
Yes. And the Cardigans come in more varieties of color. They come in Blue Merle. It's part of the breed. They come in Brindle. Whereas the Pembrokes come in that red color, that orange color. They come in Sable and they come in Tricolor. But people now are deciding they want a Blue Merle Pembroke. So they're crossbreeding them with Blue Merle Cardigan Welsh Corgis. It's like, well, just get a Cardigan Welsh Corgi. Like, why? Yeah. And then people think they have this fancy, they call them American corgis. And it's like, oh my gosh. And people are capitalizing on them.
Oh dear.
And just, yeah, like, or crossing like a German shepherd and Australian cattle dog and calling them like German heelers. Like like, don't fall for a fancy name.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes there's a reason to cross certain breeds, right? Like we do have sport mixes that we breed this breed with that breed so that we can get speed, so that we can get agility, so that we can get this, that, and the other. You know, we're looking for specific
And they go into loving
traits.
Homes that they don't add to the rescue at all. Like
exactly. Exactly. And usually it's for some sort of working characteristic.
Right.
It's not just for something that is about aesthetics.
A whim, yes.
So if you are thinking about something that is aesthetically different and that seems appealing to you, just do a little bit of research into that first and see why. You know, why is that being bred? And if there's no reason for it to be bred, chances are you're going to go down that rabbit hole and find out that it probably shouldn't be bred, you know, because it's going to lead to health issues of some sort. So definitely very important pieces of this puzzle.
Right. Yes.
Just getting back to some of the specifics about picking the right dog for you. So hopefully we've got something that's healthy now. We've got something that's got sound structure.
Right.
So, you know, they're not lame at 7 years old for the rest of their life.
Yes.
You know, you want them to hold up for all of their life. You want them to be physically sound for all of their life.
Just like you want yourself to be physically sound all your life. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. If only our parents had
had
matched perfectly to make sure that we had the perfect genetics and structure and whatnot. Who
knows? are you going to get at which? Thank you, Shannon. Yours did too.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Are you getting towards which one to pick in the litter when there's seven puppies all paying attention to you?
Ooh.
Which one do you choose?
Yeah. What's your go-to when you're looking at a litter?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is talk to the breeder they have lived with those puppies for 7 weeks. And I raised a litter once and I didn't live with the litter, but every day I went and worked with them for an old English sheepdog breeder. And I knew those puppies really well. Like
I
knew those puppies.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. So the breeder knows the puppies.
Yeah.
Yes.
So cool. Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And asking them questions and telling them what you're really looking for.
Right.
Like if you sit down and you say, okay, this is what I do. I love to do fly ball. I love to do agility. I love to do this. This is my working life. The dog gets to come with me, blah, 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 blah. The breeder is going to go, okay, you know what? This puppy really, really rock solid, really fast mover, really loves to do things, really easy to engage, blah, 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 blah. That's the puppy for that working home. That's great. If you say, you know what? I just want a dog to be my buddy. I want to do some training, but then I just want to hang out. We want to go on walks and we want to hang out and, you know, wander through the bush on the weekends for 7 hours and get burrs and our hair together. And the breeder's going to go, okay, you know what? I think that puppy's the right puppy for that home.
Yep.
I think that's a great way of starting things.
Yeah, start with the breeder.
Yeah.
Now there might be, like, I know with Cowboy, I ended up, the dog she thought I might want was not the dog I wanted. I found him to be a little bit too independent in nature. She chose me a puppy that was bold. But he was bold in the fact that he was independent and didn't really care that much about me. And knowing that breed, I thought they're already a very independent breed. I'm going to pick a puppy that's more engaged with people.
Yeah.
So I looked at each puppy individually. I didn't just look at the litter and point at one. I took each puppy out individually without distractions. And I went into an X-Pen with them.
I love that idea.
And I saw how they reacted when it was just me and them. I brought a few toys to see if they would interact with me and the toys. I made a bang noise. Did they panic and run or did they go, what was that? And then went, okay, that's fine. I can handle that. I'm not going to panic. And I found Cowboy, the puppy I picked. She was so engaging and she was the plain Jane of the litter.
Okay.
Like every other puppy was flashy and gorgeous, and Cowboy was
she was gorgeous too.
She was when she but she was in that litter, she was the plain Jane, kind of the puppy you went but her temperament, I went, oh my gosh, this is the puppy I'm looking for.
Is awesome.
She was engaging, she wanted to do stuff, she was lovely, but look wise she wasn't the puppy I wanted. But I realized, you know what? Looks aren't everything.
Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing, right? Even if you brought home, like if it's possible for a puppy to be ugly, which I question, mm-hmm. even if you brought home the ugly duckling in the litter, you're going to think it's the most gorgeous thing in the world within yes. 3 days. Yes. Like you're going to be so madly mm-hmm. in love with the puppy. It doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. You know, those looks are such a small, small thing.
Right. Yes.
Does the dog match your lifestyle? Yes. Does the dog seem like the right pick? Is there something that draws you to that dog? Mm-hmm. All of my dogs that I've had so far, I've relied very heavily on the breeders for their decision mm-hmm. with the exception of Tyler. Tyler was my second toller. And he picked me right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. At 4 weeks, as soon as they were mobile, he was, every time I'd go to visit, he was all over me. And like, I was so drawn to him as well. Like mm-hmm. there was something more than just, I love the way this puppy moves. I love the way this puppy looks at me. I love the way this puppy engages mm-hmm. with me. I just love this puppy. There was something more there that right. I could never explain. I mm-hmm. don't know how to explain it because anytime I try, it just sounds hokey, uh-huh. right? It sounds like, oh my gosh, like you're just buying into these like weird conceptions in your head. But truly there was something there that we were made to be together.
Right.
And he was the only one that I actually was thinking, if the breeder says he's not the right puppy for mm-hmm. me, I might walk away from this litter, because there wasn't even for a second any doubt in my
right,
head.
Yeah.
And this was with me going into it thinking, I need to keep an open mind. Like, stop thinking about, his name was Sully mm-hmm. in the litter.
Right.
Stop thinking about Sully. That's for you, Ash, if you're listening. baby Tyler's puppy name was Sully. Stop thinking about Sully. Mm-hmm. Like you need to look at the other puppies critically. Like there was three boys, three girls, and I was picking a boy. Mm-hmm. You need to look at all three of these boys. You need to consider all three of these boys. And I knew in that situation, ultimately the decision was the breeders, which it should be. You know, they know the puppies the best and they have the most invested right, in them yeah. and whatnot. But I truly was, for the only time ever mm-hmm. in my life, thinking I might not take a puppy from this litter if it's not Sully.
Right.
Because I was just so convinced. And of course, as fate would have it,
right.
it worked out. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you know, every single other puppy, it's been more of a confused
right, yeah.
notion yeah. to try to figure out
which
puppy was the one that I should yes. bring home. So I think at this point, I'm going to reach into our question
yes.
box and see what sort of mischief we can get into. Oh, this is a long one. Okay. Thank you for posting these videos. I found them so helpful. Well, you're welcome. I'm always so thrilled. Anytime someone's like, oh, that was so helpful.
Right,
oh,
yes.
that we got success with that. It's like a whole fresh new feeling again every single time, even though it happens quite consistently, which is lovely. It's very reinforcing for us. Okay. I don't have a puppy yet. I'm planning on getting one soon. I'm wondering how I can get my kids involved with training the puppy. They're 8 and 10. Do you have a video about kids helping to train a puppy? We probably do have a couple of videos on this. And I know we've talked about kids and dogs on the mm-hmm. podcast before. And I was so impressed with all the things you did with Ty. So I am a barrenless woman. I do. Barrenless?
Barren.
I knew that wasn't right. I'm a barren woman. I do not have children. I didn't have children of my own. I have a niece and nephew that I've you know, gotten to spoil a little bit rotten, and I adore them, mm-hmm. but never any kids of my own. So I was so impressed when we did that podcast episode with all the ideas that you had.
And so what, they should go back and look at that podcast.
Yeah.
What,
have a
look at
that
podcast.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kids
yes.
and dogs. There's so many great things to be learned from that. But basically, I mean, with kids, with my niece and nephew, I tried to involve them first off once I had some skills on the puppy. Mm-hmm. So when the puppy first came home and the puppy was just like a blob and didn't know anything yet, they hung out and mm-hmm. they had some fun and, you know, they got to play running around the yard and I made sure that there was no nipping going on. But aside from that, I was like, okay, you know what? They can just play and have some fun. But then getting them involved in things, I worked with them on teaching the puppy tricks. I worked with them on working, you know, little bits of manners and things. Mm-hmm. I used them as distraction. I played a lot of like red light, green light game
right.
with, this was mm-hmm. Ned when he was mm-hmm. a baby, with the kids. So I would yell out red light and they would stop moving if the distractions mm-hmm. got to be too much for the puppy. And then I would say green light when I was ready for them to go again. And of course they had instructions on how they were going to mm-hmm. try to distract the puppy without really distracting the puppy sort of thing.
Right.
So they enjoyed that.
Yes.
You had so many more ideas.
Thank
though.
You.
Oh,
but
goodness.
I find kids attention span leaves very quickly yes. with puppies. Very, very quickly. They like the glory, but they don't like the work.
Yeah.
Kids also have a very Disneyfied idea of what puppy ownership is like. Mm-hmm. So be sure, let them know that, you know, puppies cry all night. You're going to have some nights where you yeah. don't get any sleep. Puppies will nip you. Puppies will destroy your toys.
Yeah.
Be realistic. Let them know that there's going to be issues before you get the puppy. So when they get the puppy, they're prepared yeah. and they're not upset when the puppy, you know, doesn't want to snuggle with them. Instead, it wants to chew on their shirt or yeah. things like that. I remember Ty being, you know, upset at night when Atari was crying. Like that upset him. And I'm like, Ty, that's what puppies do. And, you know, he didn't realize it was a tactic. She was trying to get our attention.
Right.
He truly thought she was in despair yeah. crying at night.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So many things that you can prepare the kids for so that they're not upset about them. That's really important stuff. And the nipping thing as well.
Right.
Because it makes the children scared of the puppy.
Right, yes.
So if you explain it ahead of time, and if you're watching for it and you're ready for it, and of course we address it quickly, we try as much as possible mm-hmm. to impress upon all of our students, just address this, get it out of the way, and then you can move on with your life.
Right, yes.
You know, our Puppy Essentials program is usually a mixture of crating questions, mm-hmm. house training questions, and nipping questions.
Right, yes.
So lots yes. and lots of struggle in those areas.
Right, yes. But I remember when I got Cowboy, Ty was two, and I, would have to discipline Cowboy for, you know, nipping at Ty or nipping at me. And being that Ty was two, it upset him to see her being disciplined because
yeah.
he was looking at her as a stuffed animal, like as a friend almost. And I, you know, had to explain to Ty in a rudimentary way at the age of two that puppies need this type of discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, it's only for moms to do or dads to do. Like, you can never do this to her. And just getting him to accept that
yeah.
that's, you know, it's different. I'm going to treat Cowboy differently than I'm treating you.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. So. Well, and I think that honest conversation with them as well really helps to set their mind at ease.
Right.
So that they can be part of things, but not be upset by things. And yes. you're not going to hide it from them, right?
No.
Like, I can't imagine if the puppy's crying or if the puppy's nipping, it's going to be obvious to mm-hmm. the child as well. So
right.
let's just help them,
right.
help them understand what this is and that this is a natural thing.
Right. Yes.
Do you want to try a question?
Okay. Yes. Okay.
We got lots in there.
There is. Okay. I'm getting a new puppy next week. I will be home with him all day for a few days and then I have to go to work. My husband works from home, but he won't have a lot of time. Should I put him in puppy daycare?
Oh, if you're watching the podcast, we're both making faces right
yes.
now. So that's probably a no.
Right, yes, no.
What
no.
do you think about
well,
that?
Well, it depends. If the puppy daycare is one person, like a friend, who can take the puppy all day
there
and look
go.
After them properly, or you know, a parent that can take the puppy, then yeah, that's fine to do. I know when my puppies were young, the odd time they would go to my mom's house for the day. It was
yeah.
kind of like a daycare. But I would never, ever in a million years drop off a puppy at a multi-dog daycare.
Yeah, me either. We've actually done episodes on these things before, so you can definitely look that up and dive a little bit deeper into why we're not huge fans of daycare. But most daycares are just free-for-alls that end up creating hyper-social dogs mm-hmm. that now any sort of manners on leash go out the window, and their ability to focus, and they're so overstimulated all the time that it's just not good for them on any level. Mm-hmm. If you are, just like a quick synopsis here, if you are looking for a daycare, look for one that has some structure involved in it. Look for one where the dogs get some downtime, where they can actually take downtime. Mm-hmm. You know, a cageless facility doesn't allow a dog
no.
time, or downtime rather.
No.
You know, even if they try to tuck themselves in the corner, if there's 20 other dogs running around, those dogs are going to come and invade their space over and over and over again. Not every dog will love that.
No.
Most dogs don't like that.
Right.
And most dogs, as they get older, will get more selectively social. And there's all sorts of problems that can come from that hyper play, nonstop, always being in this over aroused state. Like, it's just, I mean, if you imagine your kids, right? Imagine mm-hmm. your kids on recess all day long.
Right. Yes. Oh, yes.
You know, yes, we need this downtime to let our hair down, right?
Right.
We need this time to go, wah, life is mm-hmm. fun and run around. We need to have the outlet for the sugar from those cookies, right? We need to do this. But there's a reason that recess is 15 minutes.
Right.
And the school day is, what, like 2 hours before that, 2 hours after that, then lunch?
Right.
Like, am I right? I think so. Yeah. Close enough, yeah. right?
And not all dogs love daycare. Like Atari, that would have been her, actually all my dogs, I think they love being with me. So that would have been their nightmare.
Yeah.
And some breeds, like a Sheltie, like that would be her absolute nightmare to be pounced on by Labs and Goldens, and it would just be a horrific experience. So
yeah, most definitely.
Yes. You don't know. Yes. Like my idea of a perfect daycare would be I'd have a beautiful kennel area, and I would bring out each dog individually, and I would do things with them. I'd teach them little skills and do some mental work, play with them, then put that one away, then get out the next one, let them go to the bathroom, work with them, then put them away. Yeah. So the dogs aren't out all day, but when they are out, it's valuable time with a human.
Yes. And they don't need to be out all day. That's the thing. Right, puppies need to rest and sleep, and they don't need to be out there crashing and banging all day long.
No.
I'd be worried about the dog physically. Yes. If I had a puppy that was constant play all day long, I would be very worried about what that was doing to them physically.
Right.
So my goodness.
No, I would not recommend puppy daycare.
Yeah,
no, I would maybe even if I felt I didn't have time for a puppy, maybe I'll look for an adult dog.
Yeah.
I know that's you know, a little bit of, you know, direct, you know,
yeah.
But I did mention that I have two people who have called us. One lady was a paramedic working 12-hour shifts, and she didn't know how she was going to make the puppy work. And I said, well, maybe you shouldn't get a puppy.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you should get an adult dog.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And you know what? Like those are the things that you want to think about as you're heading into what breed, what kind, when, mm-hmm. all of the questions that, you know, how is this dog going to fit into my lifestyle? And if I had a dog that I couldn't meet their needs through the day. So I have a puppy or a dog that, you know, maybe I work 12-hour shifts. Maybe I work 8-hour shifts mm-hmm. with a puppy. And I need something to help tide them over until I get home. I'm probably going to hire somebody to come in individually, take my puppy out, play with them in the yard. Maybe, you know, I'm a little bit of a control freak when it comes to my dog. So I probably wouldn't want them taking the dog out and about because I want to make sure that I'm reinforcing the right things and not, not letting the dog learn bad habits, et cetera. I also want to make sure I'm very careful about what I'm exposing the dog to, because if they're still not completed, if they've not completed their full vaccinations, then that's going to be something I need to consider as well. So that would be a much better way
that's,
of helping.
That's exactly
to
how
that pressure.
I would do it as well. Yeah. We did that with Saber when she was an adult. I can't remember the situation, but for some reason we needed a lady to come in, and we hired a wonderful lady, and she would come in. Actually, it was first thing in the morning we needed her.
Okay.
And she would come in at, I think, around 7 a.m. and let Saber out and give Saber her breakfast. And she made a coffee at our house and basically just let Saber run around in the yard. She drank a coffee, interacted with her, and that was that. And we had to do that for, I think, about a few months that happened.
Okay.
And it worked out perfect. And that would be great with a puppy too.
Yeah, get,
you know, there's all kinds of dog walkers out there. You know, ask the vet for a recommendation, or, you know, Google, and you'll find someone who will come to your house and visit and give the puppy some quality time.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. The only other thing that I think is worth mentioning, we've talked about so many different things today, but the only other thing that I wanted to make sure that we mentioned was noise, because there's a big difference in some of the breeds when it comes to noise.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Some of our little dogs really like to bark shrill and loud and a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our bigger dogs have big barks. Some of our bigger dogs have no barks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Tollers are not known for barking. But they sure have a scream. They say the same thing about Basenjis,
right?
Basenjis are known as the barkless dog, but they yodel.
Right.
You don't hear a lot of barking come from beagles, but they bay.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, what kind of noise is innate to the dog that you're thinking about? Mm. And what are you willing to put up with?
Right. Yes.
You know, Sheltie, like, lived with a Sheltie. Yes. Talk about this for a second.
Before I got Atari, I knew that Shelties barked. And I thought, oh, that's, you know, no problem. I just,
bark.
Yeah.
I've had
but
dogs.
It's like, holy man, it's different.
Yeah.
Like, they bark.
This is genetics.
It's genetics at play. And I, I was on top of it right from the start, but I still got those emotional barks.
Like, it's the as I live and breathe.
Right. Bark. It's like, oh, I see something, bark, bark. I see something, bark, bark. Oh, I'm excited, bark, bark. Like, it was, there was far more barking than I ever expected. So believe people when they tell you things.
Well, and it's different because it's not just connected to an event, right? It's not necessarily just connected to, oh, I heard a noise, I'm going to alert bark.
It's happy. It's like
I want barking. To demand something, so I'm going to bark. Or there's somebody walking by outside, so I'm going to bark. Sometimes it's just triggered by motion, right?
Right.
The dog moves, they bark because it's so ingrained, right?
Yes.
This little package of a dog is supposed to be out there moving creatures that are much bigger than they are. So they have to sound loud and intimidating, maybe annoying.
Shelties are great at we always talk about you need to pinpoint when your dog is good. You need to pinpoint when they've made an error.
Yeah.
Shelties are great at that. The moment something moves, Shelties pinpoint it with their voice.
Within 1 second.
Shelties have great timing. Oh, they I always laughed. It's like, oh, Atari saw that well. Like,
perfect.
Yeah, the moment something moves,
perfect timing.
Yes.
Done.
You know, they don't all.
Yeah.
But a lot of them do. So if you're thinking of Shelties are amazing little dogs. Mm-hmm. Like I adored Atari. But, you know, talk to the breeder about the barking and the shedding because those were I found were the two downfalls of the Sheltie. They're adorable. They're smart. They're great little family dogs, but they bark and they shed.
Yeah. And I always say, find out those negatives first.
Yes.
Because obviously we love the positives, right? The positives are a piece of cake to live with.
Right.
If you can live with the negatives, then you'll enjoy the positives. But if you can't live with those negatives, then there's no point in doting on the positives because you're not going to make it through the negatives.
Exactly. Yes.
So tollers, I would say they're negatives. Lots of shedding and mess. They are muckers. You know, if you find that a negative, if you like your floors to be fastidious all the time and you don't want to wash your floors every 5 minutes, you know, that's probably not the right type of dog.
Right, yeah. Or if you like to, wear black clothes a lot. Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
If you don't like to groom and pull out undercoat, if you don't like dogs that scream potentially, you know, there's some negatives there. I can live with all those negatives.
Right, yes.
I can live with them or I can train them out.
Right.
And the positives, of course, are a piece of cake.
Yes, yes. So, yes, put thought, like, don't just... I find a lot of people love the appearance of huskies. A lot of people love the appearance of a pit bull type breed, mm-hmm. but they may not be the best suited breed for you. And I agree, they're beautiful, striking dogs, mm-hmm. but you know,
there's a lot to them.
There's a lot to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot more to a dog than appearance.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is what you're going to do is find out what all those traits are and find out if you can live with them. And on that note, I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swanee.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888 or visit us at McCannDogs.com. Happy training!